The Minikheim Show is presented by Coors Light, the beer made to chill. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Hey guys, it's Mina reminding you to download and subscribe to That's What She Said with Sarah Spain. This week, Sarah chats with Jemele Hill about her tenure at ESPN, the handful of jobs she now has, and what it was like to be on the Bravo show Below Deck. You can find That's What She Said wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to the Minikheim Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks Cam Newton's nickname should be Furbo. Field, do you know what a Furbo is?
Hold on, that's not a Furby, is it?
No, not a Furby. I'm surprised Furbo ads haven't been served to you now that you have a dog, because it's a dog camera that shoots out treats at your dog. So it's like a cam, hence cam, yeah.
That is really smart.
Honestly, it's like a gift, now one of those gifts everyone gets you if you're into dogs. So if you know Field, get him a Furbo. Really quick, Field, before we start, I just want to cover something important, which is when I went back to read the ad, little intro with Sarah Spain for this show, I stumbled across my email exchange with the producer of this program, Dan Stanzik. He does make a lot of appearances on this podcast, but he asked me what time it was, and I wrote back, Field wants to do 2:30/5:30. Dan wrote to me, is that 2:30 Eastern, 5:30 Pacific, or the reverse? Dan, you can unmute yourself. I just want you to explain yourself, because it's honestly one of the most befuddling emails I've ever received.
I mean, it was a low moment for me, okay? and normally, I'm going to try to blame you for this. I'm probably not going to be successful, but normally when you're giving someone else the time, you start with their time and then you back end it with your time. So I saw the 2:30. I'm like, oh, is that Eastern?
It's all
and then
about
I got
you.
Confused. Okay. Yes, that's correct.
Oh, huh.
Field with me, I hope.
You know something, Dan? It is in my sort of like my default thinking in life is generally to try to do my best to protect you, consider you a friend. You are an astute, learned mind. You watch Jeopardy nightly. But I got to side with Mina here. I'm not quite sure where you're going with that on that one. I got to be entirely honest.
It's a rough turn of events for our friend Dan. A team that did not have a rough turn of events, a team that had a quite fortuitous turn of events, Field, is the New England Patriots. And I had you on today to continue our division previews, and we are going to preview the AFC South. And I'm really excited to talk about the AFC South after doing that. I feel like I say that every time. When is the division where I'm going to say, oh, I don't want to talk about this one, but I actually am excited to talk about the AFC South. But you're here. You know the Patriots as well as anyone. You are a brilliant football mind, which I'm so excited to have you on today. I just want to talk about the football side of it, right? Because, you know, we can talk about how crazy it is that it's such little money and what it means for Cam Newton in his future. But right now, I just want to talk about what Cam Newton is going to look like in the Patriots offense. And I guess I should start this conversation by saying, I think if he's healthy, there's no question he's the starter. And this comes from someone who did an entire 45-minute podcast on Jarrett Stidham. Really good use of my time.
I feel like you have broken down a couple of his preseason games as well. And Mina, I'm going to carve out time at some point during this podcast to brag about you. I know that, you know, the beginning of podcasts, we want to get right to the stuff that people are most interested in hearing about. But you must promise me like 90 seconds at some point to brag about you and your new gig at some point during the podcast. That's actually part of the contract that we signed prior to this podcast.
You can ask me a question at the end.
Okay, fair enough. So you're right. Like, here's the thing about Cam Newton though, is that when you said like, let's just talk about the football, is that so much of the evaluation with Cam, Mina, unfairly, is that it's never only about the football. There was a woman who wrote an op-ed in the Tennessean some number of years ago. Her name was Rosemary. She brought her 9-year-old daughter to watch a Titans-Panthers game.
Worst.
I mean, literally wrote an op-ed, and she was disappointed by Cam's, there was a reference to pelvic thrusts amongst other things that Cam did, right? So the bottom line is what Cam did is he laid one on the Titans. He basically single-handedly beat them, right? And there were some people that were big mad about it. So Cam, it will never be about just the football for some people's minds for whatever reason, which is such a ridiculous and truly unfair thing to Cam. Because we're talking about a player that has been one of the most productive and enjoyable players to watch in football. And if anything, we should actually just be focused on the football from Cam, because not that he was the original dual threat quarterback, but I would make the case he sort of reintroduced dual threat quarterbacks into the NFL with the way that he has played for the past 8 years. So 9 years, last year was obviously just two games, but let's get to the football side of it. The Patriots prior to Cam, as you noted, they were going to probably rely upon Jared Stidham. And people have asked me a lot that, hey, is the move to sign Cam, did they not see enough from Jared Stidham during Zoom sessions? Like, was his internet strength not good enough? Was he not communicative enough during Zooms? Like, what is going on? As I've not only thought about it myself, but also talking to people close to the situation, is that it was at the time when the news broke, June 28th, Cam Newton was available for a deal. And as of this recording, Mina, we don't have the specifics of it, but we expect Cam's base salary to be around $2 million, according to Schefty. Cam Newton, around $2 million, Mina. That right there is enough to pique anybody's interest. And while Cam is an imperfect player, one thing I think actually makes Cam sort of an easier evaluation is that Cam's strengths are really obvious, and so are his limitations, right? If there are two things that have bothered Cam in his career, one of them is recent, and that's health. The other is something that has been a problem basically since he entered the league. His accuracy. He's a 59.6% completion percentage quarterback, which is that's like 5 to 6 points below where it probably needs to be for us to be saying this is a consistently accurate quarterback. But as I know you know, his last full season as a starter, which was 2018, he showed that he can be a really accurate quarterback. He completed 67% of his passes. You know what else happened? The type of throws he was making were a lot different than the throws he was making for the first 7 seasons. His yards per attempt nosedived, which is a good thing, to 7.2, which the takeaway is for the first 7 years of his career, there was a lot of driving the football down the field, higher risk, but also, you know, a lot more likely to have a 60% completion percentage type of throws than what we saw in 2018, where the Turners, Norv and Scott, father and son duo, who are the coordinator and quarterback coach, basically found an offense that made life a lot easier on Cam and said, you're unique and you're dynamic, but we can also help you out here. There's nothing wrong with putting the football in playmakers' hands, whether it's DJ Moore or Curtis Samuel, or in this case, moving things forward in New England, their receivers. And we can get more out of you than maybe was previously realized. So I think from a football fit, Mina, Patriots have way too much infrastructure. They're way too smart. They're way too creative. And there is enough time. We still have a training camp. We'll see how long that is and when it starts. But there's enough time to make this work that I'm super interested in.
So much to unpack here. I agree with pretty much everything you said. I think it's fascinating to think about when the Patriots decided they were going to do this as well, right? Because all offseason we've been puzzling about why is it only Stidham? Why wouldn't you, even if you like him and everyone's saying they like him, why wouldn't you even bring in competition? But one thing I think that was also interesting about the Stidham question is they basically tried to, not try, but this was, I guess there's a little bit of speculation here. There was this sense that New England was trying to build a quarterback-proof offense a little bit. We weren't going to see the offense that Tom Brady's been running. It would be actually a lot more like kind of the offense from the early 2000s, right? Just a more heavy sets, a ton of play action, emphasis on the run game. So some people might look at that and, you know, they added tight ends. They brought on Danny Vitale, fullback. After Devlin was hurt last year, they didn't have one. Some people might look at that field and say, okay, great. Yeah, power running, bring in Cam. But I don't think, Cam Newton gives you so much more, not just because, yes, he was dynamic in the power running game in his past, and I still think if he's healthy, there's some utility there, and especially situationally, like in the red zone, just having a quarterback who changes the numbers for defenses, God knows Bill Belichick has been on the wrong end of that over the last few years, that's huge for them. But as you said, in that North Turner offense in 2018, and just a little bit what we saw last year, he was hurt. You saw he can run, and I think execute really well a quick passing game, which is much more similar to what Tom Brady did, right, over the last few years. So I think what you're going to see, what's ideal for Cam, is sort of a hybrid of those two things. You know, incorporate that quick game, a ton of play action, and yes, use him as a runner judiciously. But I think it's just going to be a lot more creative than anything we've seen out of New England in years.
Josh McDaniels is salivating right now.
Oh my God. I'm so excited to see what he does.
Totally. And listen, no one will ever, like, I can't tell you that, like, the Patriots would ever in a million years trade away what they had for the past 20 years because of the lack of ability to be creative. Of course we're not saying that. You had the greatest run in NFL history over 20 years. But of course there's a certain excitement that comes with signing Cam Newton. I've described this as a shot in the arm, and there's so many tentacles to this. I'm going to try to keep it to the stuff that's most pertinent. But one of the things that I think makes Cam Newton so fascinating as a player, Mina, and it actually works really well when you look back on the last two games he had against the Patriots. He played incredibly well in 2013 and 2017. I would think that it's basically accepted. It is a football fact that no coach devises better, more fundamentally sound, sort of strategic game plans than Bill Belichick as a defensive mind. I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming you probably agree with me to a large degree.
I would agree.
Cam carved the Patriots up each of the last two times he played him, and here's the reason why. I mean, there are many reasons why, but one of the heart issues that Cam, or one of the biggest things that Cam was able to do, is that it's one thing to have an idea to draw it up how it looks when you're going through practice during the week. And at the time, I don't even know who the Patriots scout team quarterback was to emulate Cam Newton. Once Cam is on the field, like, you've got 3, 5, 7 seconds of an idea of what you want to run, and then all bets are off, right? Like, it just takes one defensive end to run a yard and a half too far upfield. It just takes one linebacker who sags into coverage a little bit too hard, or a linebacker that thinks, hey, you know what? The pocket's sort of crumbling right now. I might have a chance to pierce an interior gap and get Cam. And the next thing you know, Cam turns the corner and runs for 18 yards. That, to me, is what makes Cam such an intriguing player for any offense. And part of the reason why I'm so excited to see him just sort of uncorked, right? Like, this is a guy who deserves another opportunity, because the best of Cam is one of the most interesting and compelling, and I think, again, I've used this word a few times now, dynamic players I've ever witnessed at quarterback.
So I want to wrap the Cam discussion by throwing a little bit cold water on our optimism, and I want to see what you think about this. By the way, the biggest gallon of cold water is the health. We are all applying that caveat to literally every sentence about Cam Newton. So, you know, if he's not healthy, none of this happens. If he is healthy, it's still not a great group of skill players. In fact, far from it. In fact, they were god-awful last year. Now, there's pretty much no way they could be worse this year, I think. Last words. But Mohamed Sidibé is not as terrible. He's a good wide receiver, man. He looked like trash last year, but he was hurt. Edelman's older. N'Keal Harry, again, another year in the NFL. You got to think he's going to be a little better. They added, like I said, the tight ends and the fullback. But, and of course, on the offensive line, too. They've got David Andrews back, Isaiah Wynn. They need to replenish the offensive line, although they did lose Dante Scarnecchia. Okay. Is Cam Newton walking into the right situation for him in terms of personnel? Now, I think there's some advantages to all of this, which is, I was talking to my friend Stephen DeReese about this. When you have a quarterback like him, who's a threat as a runner, it's a lot harder to play man defense. So, you know, you can't be as sticky on those not very fast Patriots wide receivers. But Field, when I look at that depth chart, that's when I'm like, okay, I'm excited about this, but it's still not great.
Yeah, I think the quick counterpoint is only that, when did Cam Newton have great weapons around him in Carolina that you were like, oh man, imagine, you know, you know, Cam is just the depth of the Panthers wideouts is just, you know, crazy again. So, that's probably the quick counterpoint. Cam, and I'm like cliche out the Wazoo right now, but Cam is the rising tide, right? He floated the boats in Carolina. He had 50 touchdowns in a single season with like Ted Ginn Jr. as one of the most important players on the offense, right? Like he has done some remarkable things. And I think the Patriots skill group is one that like we could look at it a little bit differently by midseason this year and say like, wait, these are the same guys that couldn't get it going last year. But I think Cam has the ability, again, presuming health. That to me is the cold water. Is if he's not healthy, or if, you know, 31-year-old Cam is just not built to last in the way that 26 or 27-year-old Cam is, then all of a sudden the ceiling for this team drops. But Mina, I would just say this: it's a really cool football story. I'm excited. It's a really unique marriage, and I got like kind of like on Sunday night. It's been a while since we had like a story about football that was just on the field. So it was really, it was kind of invigorating to have something, no matter where Cam signed, it was cool.
I tweeted, wear a mask so we can have football, just so I can see what Josh McDaniels does with Cam. Don't ruin this for me, people.
Everybody really wear a mask. Do it.
Yes, wear a mask anyways. Wear a mask for 1,000 more important reasons, but wear a mask so we can see Cam Newton run the triple option. Okay, we've talked a lot about Cam Newton. I'm excited. We'll talk about it more. But we are here today to talk about the AFC South, and I think they're an interesting division because it's really, to me, three teams that could finish in any order and one other team. Sorry, Jacksonville. Although, I'm excited to talk about Jacksonville. The three teams, and you might disagree, by the way, Field, about the three teams.
Nope.
Who do you think who is your favorite right now of the three teams? And we'll talk about that team first, whoever it is.
It's the Titans. And what I would say, and I think you said this too, is that it's three teams who, if they win the division, the catalyst could be three very different, styles, right? It could be very, very different. So to me, it's the Titans. And
let's talk about Titans.
Yep. So a couple of overarching themes from last year to this year is, there's a weird off season, obviously. We've already endured most of it and we'll see what it looks like as we get closer to training camp. Continuity is very much on their side, right? It is basically the most important players and the coaching staff coming back this year as it was last year. There were some changes, no doubt about it, but a lot of the same pieces are in place. Beyond that, they're not the best team in the NFL, obviously, but if you were to just like put if there was to be a like if you had to design if you had to say what is the Titans' identity and do the pieces fit within that identity? It's pretty obvious it does. So on offense, the Titans want to wear you out in the running game. Like all five of their starting offensive linemen are guys that like to like inflict pain and impose their will on defensive linemen, right? Some guys are made to be pass protectors. These guys are made to just like want to like chew out 5 to 6 yards per carry and grind it down your throat. Beyond that, on offense, they also have like all of a sudden they have like these explosive downfield threats in the passing game. And then on defense, it's not a group with a bunch of obvious blue chippers, but they're really tough, fundamentally sound. I know these are like so lame in some people's eyes, but like they know exactly what they're supposed to do, and it the pieces fit well together, right? Like, there's some players who are underrated. I think Kevin Byard, for some reason, even though he's super well paid now, still like an underrated safety or underappreciated safety. But for the most part, every piece on defense, I get what the goal was when John Robinson, their GM, acquired those players, right? I get where they were coming from. So I like Tennessee. Do you disagree?
For me, it's between the Titans and the Colts. I slightly lean Colts for reasons we can discuss. Partly because I think, you know, what you're accurately pointing out, the lack of an offseason, I think Phillip Rivers is one of the quote unquote new quarterbacks who is well positioned to, I guess, not be too affected by that. Let's talk about, but I want to talk to you about the Titans offense first. So, you know, going through these rosters, kind of going, you know, there, I do see, okay, what are the holes? Where are these teams thin? I should start by saying it's insane to me that the Titans, and I said this to you, Field, and I've said it on our network a bunch now, that they don't have a veteran backup quarterback behind Ryan Tannehill, to which Titans fans accuse me of Logan Woodside disrespect. Listen, if Logan Woodside becomes a great quarterback please play the audio of me doubting him on the montage of his Hall of Fame career. I will accept that shame. But he is a seventh round pick who was cut by the Bengals in 2018 and cut by the Titans. So Tannehill with his injury history, you know, they need someone. The Titans should know that more than anything. I think the wide receiver group, while I adore AJ Brown and I think he is fantastic, I mean, he embodies to me that identity of the team and that he's like this incredible physical yards after the catch monster. I think it's pretty thin behind him, quite frankly. And that was something kind of as I was going through. I do love Jonnu Smith, who again really embodies that identity, the tight end, sort of the new Delanie Walker. But, you know, it's not the deepest group of weapons. I'm not worried about the offensive line, which, even though they lost Jack Conklin, was absolutely destroying worlds down the stretch. We talk a lot about Derrick Henry. Go back and watch the left side of the Titans' offensive line in those final few games. Crazy.
I think defensive linemen were losing teeth playing against the Titans. It was nuts. You're absolutely
Taylor Lewan, my God.
Yeah, Taylor Lewan was killing people. I mean, I know he was pissed off about missing, you know, he has previously missed time because of a suspension to begin last season. I know he's pissed. Like he played with an edge. I love that. And your points are well taken on the depth of skill groups. So the Titans need Adam Humphries to play like the player that signed a $38 million contract last year.
Wow, I forgot about that.
Yeah, they need it. And Adam Humphries was one of those guys that went from quickly underappreciated in Tampa Bay to I don't think he was in over his skis last year. I don't. I think that there were some injury concerns. I think that like things just started off slowly. And I always wonder like what kind of pressure that brings upon a player, like an undrafted free agent who like playing next to Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. And all of a sudden he's making $9.5 million per year. I wonder psychologically, like what it's like at the beginning of the season if you don't come out with, you know, like 3 games in 4 weeks with 8 catches or more, you know? And they need Corey Davis. I mean, Corey Davis needs to play like a fifth overall pick. Corey Davis, who had his 5th year option declined, and I bet I could go find some old tweets of mine where it's like Corey Davis is a competent quarterback away from being a star. But like at some point, maybe it isn't just Corey, you know, the quarterback play, because Tannehill was really good last year. But Corey Davis, like when you see him, and there have been moments 2 years ago in the playoffs, like he had Stephon Gilmore's, like he literally like took Stephon Gilmore's lunch money. He was so good. And yet here we are, and it's like, wait, Corey Davis, 6'4", 225 pounds, runs like a 4.4 40, and has like, I don't even know how many career catches it is, but it's not many, Mina. It's not nearly enough.
I think Ryan Tannehill is not going to be as good as he was last year. However, I still think he could be a good quarterback. And because like what they did last year was like statistically almost like in the red zone in particular, red field, it's not reproducible.
75% would be the percentage. I think they scored a touchdown on 75% of their red zone trips. Just for those that aren't like super deep into like a red zone touchdown percentage stats. I'm pretty sure like the league average was like 62 or something. It was a much lower number than 75.
It's not happening again. But because I like the offensive line, because I, you know, they kept Derrick Henry, I think smartly tagged him, because I thought Arthur Smith showed a lot last year, and because Ryan Tannehill was good in 2016, like he's shown flashes of being a good quarterback. I would say not like an elite quarterback, but a very good quarterback at points throughout his career. I think it's totally possible that he once again finishes in, you know, the top half of quarterbacks in the NFL. So maybe that's, I know everyone's kind of wondering, is he going to be, you know, a one-hit wonder, which is, again, really not accurate because there were points in his career when he was better. I just think he's going to be not the best, but still a good quarterback personally.
Interesting question here, and there may not be a right answer. How long is the leash on Ryan Tannehill? The backup quarterback room suggests that the leash is, you know, super long. It goes from Nashville to Memphis, right? But, like, at the end of the day, Mina, you're right, he had some moments in Miami, and obviously was tremendous last year, but how much of a gamble is it to go all in on Ryan Tannehill? I mean, he was traded for a bag of peanuts and a 4th-round pick last year, right? It's a fascinating question because, you know, ultimately you pay players for what they're going to do, not what they have done. And they're projecting that he's going to be worth 4 years and $118 million. I think it's 92 of that guaranteed. So they're basically married to Ryan Tannehill for 4 years. But how long is a leash? And B, like what defines success for Ryan Tannehill? Do they have to win the division for it to be worth it? Do they have to win the division and win playoff games? I know that sort of, that this is, These are sort of more rhetorical. I'm not even rhetorical, but they're just sort of discussion points more than they are questions. But I think it's a really interesting storyline to watch this year for them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think, like you said, the backup room suggests that there is a long leash. And heck, maybe that's part of the reason why they don't have, you know, a highly paid backup, is because they want to give him that leash and sort of justify the contract, which I frankly didn't love. But I, to answer your other question, like, what does he have to do? Well, unfortunately, like, I think some of that luck last year, I do think luck factored into it, set up some pretty high expectations, right?
Yeah.
I do think this is a good defense. I think the other hole on this roster, so the one thing I identified was backup quarterback, wide receiver, and then the other one that really jumped out at me was edge rush,
Italy.
Which I want to talk to you about, Phil, because you're very plugged into the NFL. Why did this team, which has money, not sign a veteran edge rusher?
Well, so
yet.
I think there's still a chance. I was going to say, there's still a chance with Jadeveon Clowney, and we're recording this for full disclosure. Yeah, totally. Marcus Golden and a bunch of other guys, Everson Griffin, there are guys who will sign, and they are a team that strikes me as 100% in, you know, amongst the plausible teams. So Harold Landry, out of Boston College, second round pick a couple of years ago, a guy who showed some life last year. They've already talked about, like, Tennessee wants him to play less this year than he played last year. And maybe that's just, you know, keeping him fresh. But they want him to play less this year than last year. So, okay, A, that suggests they need more pass rushing depth. They signed Vic Beasley, who at one point led the NFL in sacks for a full season. Last year, Vic Beasley was, I mean, again, way too inconsistent. A guy who had his fifth year option decline, first round pick, eighth overall, a lot of pedigree. And he couldn't even make it through 5 years, right, in Atlanta. So, that's a hedge there. So I think they have some level of belief. Kamale Correa, they re-signed him. He's just like rock solid, nothing sort of like overly sexy about his game, but just going to get the job done. But you're right, Mina. It is a team that could use one more. They, if I were making the calls there, and not that, you know, they have an excellent general manager in John Robinson, but I wonder how closely he's looking at this veteran edge market, because they need one more guy there. I think they do.
There is a lot of pressure on Jeffrey Simmons to make more of an, again, they might go out and sign someone, but just saying right now, as this roster is currently constituted, they need him to be dominant on the inside, rushing the passer. He was okay in run defense last year. Of course, you know, coming off of the injury, I think he also was kind of banged up all year. He wore a knee brace, but I'm just saying they need him to reproduce Jarrell Casey's pass rush production. I'm still a little bit perplexed by the fact that he's not on the Titans anymore, but, which is, you know, a pickup I liked, but they need more from him. I've talked at length about how much I like the linebackers on this team, you know, generally, and I don't think that's an issue. By the way, man, remember how much of a beast Rashawn Evans was in the playoffs?
Oh yeah.
I kind of forgot about that.
So fun to watch.
It was incredible.
That. Finally coming
and then,
together.
You know, J.M. Brown's consistently awesome as well. I just think the front and the edge rush questions. And by the way, I should have said this at the top. Dean Pease isn't there anymore. I actually have no idea who's running this defense. Is Mike Vrabel just going to call plays or what?
Yeah, I think that the suggestions are that this is basically going to be Mike Vrabel running the defense. And not only that, Kerry Coombs, their secondary coach, went back to Ohio State. You know, a guy that was super respected. Him and Vrabel, like, he had sort of, you know, Vrabel obviously had played at Ohio State too and had a long-standing relationship there. But still, like, it feels like systematically they're kind of planning to do the same thing. And I think the influence of Mike Vrabel in previous years was enough that, you know, I mentioned continuity at the top. Like, I think they feel like the process will largely be the same as it was last year, this year.
Well, that's interesting because, so Dean Pease, you know, his defense was known for, they put a lot of cover three, which is interesting, right? For when you think of Patriots adjacent teams. I don't know the right way to describe the Patriots sort of influences.
Sure.
But usually you associate them with playing a ton of man. And then, of course, a ton of disguised coverage, a lot of trickery. It's a pretty complicated defense. I think it'll be very interesting to see if they do anything differently. You know, it's a good secondary. Still have Dory Jackson, Malcolm Butler, Logan Ryan's gone, which I forgot until doing this exercise. They drafted Christian Fulton out of LSU, which I think could be the steal of the draft. But I guess so. I am pretty confident in the personnel. And then, as you mentioned, great safeties, Kevin Byard and Kenny Vaccaro. So the personnel is fine. I'm just not really sure what if it's going to look any different with a new sort of defensive coach calling the shots.
Yeah, so I think, again, I think their interpretation is that it will look pretty similar and it'll be a similar and comparable operation. But that's a factor that needs to be built into and baked into sort of the TBD, because there is a TBD nature to them this year. But my own opinion is that they are the favorites going into 2020.
Is Fulton going to play in the slot, you think? Now I'm just kind of looking.
The plan is Adoree Jackson's going to move over into the slot. So Adoree Jackson, who's sort of an unconventional slot player, right? Crazy speed, unbelievable athlete. Like, I almost wonder if, like, you know, if you told me he switched to wide receiver, it wouldn't have stunned me. He's that sort of twitchy and athletic. But the plan is for him to get some more slot reps. You know, they've used him some in that role in the past. Like, they've tried in the past to match him up with Tyreek Hill in shadow coverage because of the speed. And obviously, he'll play a ton of snaps in the slot for Kansas City. But I think Adoree Jackson, I mean, it's not quite change of scenery, but it might be enough to kind of spark him. He's been fine, but I don't think he's been overwhelmingly great in his first three seasons. He did have that fifth-year option picked up, so he's got a little bit more security than Corey Davis, but still, something to keep an eye on there.
Let's take a quick break. Guys, summer is still out there. We'll just have to work a little bit harder to make our summer moments happen, and Coors Light wants to be right there with you by making it easier to chill this summer, starting with its new Chill Summer Can, featuring sunglasses that turn blue when the beer is cold and ready to drink. Coors Light is brewed with a three-step cold process, cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged, so it's actually made to chill. Born in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado in 1978, Coors Light is refreshing, crisp, and only 102 calories. That's why Coors Light is the one to choose when you need a moment of chill. So when you want to reset this summer, reach for the beer that's made to chill. You can have Coors Light delivered by going to get.coorslight.com and finding local delivery options near you. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. So I assume your number two team is Indianapolis, my number one team. Am I assuming correctly?
You are assuming correctly.
Let's start with what I think is really fun. I'm really excited to watch this Indianapolis offense. So there has been change. I mentioned Rivers. They also went out and hired Mike Rowe, right, from Philadelphia.
Yep.
As I think a pass game special. I don't know what his title is.
One of those random titles that no one really is sure what it means, but gets him on the staff. Guy, and it's a good thing. Yeah.
He's around. He's around. I mean, he's under Frank Reich, who I love.
Yep.
And by the way, Frank Reich, it's been interesting. He has talked up Phil Rivers' arm strength, which I think would be a bonus in an offense that completely lacked an explosive passing game last year, but isn't necessary because this run game, which added Jonathan Taylor, I think is going to be utterly dominant. They were seventh in DVOA last year running ball. So now you've got this two-headed monster of Marlon Mack, who's really good, and Jonathan Taylor behind arguably the best offensive line in football. And then you've got Phillip Rivers, who can operate Frank Reich's quick passing game, I think, completely well. In Rivers, even last year, you know, all his struggles were mostly from forcing the ball deep, often in, you know, situations where he was playing from behind. And they went out and added, I think, a very exciting, I know rookie receivers don't always make an impact out of the gate, but I think Michael Pittman Jr. out of USC is one of those receivers, big bodied, good at getting off the line, who could be really impactful immediately. So I know I just said a zillion things, but all told, I'm very excited to just see how this comes together.
Yeah, I agree entirely. So a couple of things here to sort of ping pong with what you said there. So you mentioned the arm strength for Phillip Rivers. I think that's a factor. So Phillip Rivers is like a great quarterback context debate, right? Because 20 interceptions last year is terrible. It doesn't matter what offense you play in. It's just not going to work. But the Chargers offensive line last year, if the Colts offensive line is a 10 or whatever, something close to a 10, the Chargers are like a 3, right? Like, it's such a different set of circumstances. Last year, the Chargers were basically, Austin Eckler was amazing for the Chargers last year, but the fact that a running back had like 90, whatever, 3 catches or something, it's like, because you had to get the ball out quick because you had no offensive line. The Colts are so dramatically different. They've got the same 5 offensive linemen starting for the 3rd straight year. The only team in the NFL that can say that, which that matters. And they're really good players too. So I think Phillip Rivers, we just talk about, like, I will forever remember this, is that I was still in my scouting days when Sam Bradford came out of Oklahoma. And part of the reason why Sam Bradford kept getting jobs is that, like, I promise you, if you went and saw Sam Bradford in a 7-on-7 drill, you'd be like, I've never seen a quarterback throw with the accuracy that Sam Bradford throws, right? So now it's just when the, you know, when the game is actually being played and you've got, you know, defenders within, you know, 6 inches of you all the time and you're totally 100%, like, completely overwhelmed, it's not the same thing, right? So I think that's the big question with Phillip Rivers, is with space and better playmakers, or maybe not better playmakers because the wide receivers are really good in Los Angeles, but good playmakers around you, awesome offensive line. Can we see what we've been accustomed to seeing from Phillip Rivers in years preceding 2019?
How do you feel about Pittman? I know I was kind of talking him up. I mean, so that was the obvious need, right, for Indianapolis, because you got T.Y. Hilton, this speedy downfield threat. You know, can use him in the slot. You've got Paris Campbell, who was hurt last year, but you'd hope could be something of an X factor this season. And I know there's questions about whether or not he can sort of be a traditional wide receiver. So it was very obvious that the Colts needed an X, right? Do you think, and oh, Devin Funchess, who they signed last year, got hurt immediately.
Yep.
Do you think Pittman has, and because Field, I know you do better draft prep than anyone, do you think he has the qualities needed for this offense for Phillip Rivers to succeed?
It's really fun. Yes, I do. And I actually remember this. During the pre-draft process, this was obviously during quarantine. So there was times where, like, you're kind of waiting for stuff to happen. And when you're on the world of Twitter, like, at some point you want your timeline to be about something other than just, like, COVID updates. And I remember there was, it might have been the at Twitter Sports or a handle like that that just tweeted underrated. And this was maybe, like, I don't know, early April. And I quote tweeted and just said, Michael Pittman Jr., right? And, like, that was the whole tweet. And I just think that in a really great wide receiver class, he got overlooked. And so what does he do well? First of all, he's huge. He's a behemoth. He's like 6'5", all of it, and 200 and let's say 25, 30 pounds, whatever the exact numbers are sort of irrelevant to me. If you saw him, you'd be like, that guy might be a tight end. Super competitive catch greatness, right? Like if it's him and the defender and the ball, I like his chances 8 times out of 10. I think sort of advanced and nuanced understanding of route running. Maybe that's just him. Maybe that's having grown up around the game. His dad, Michael Sr., played for many years in the NFL, productive runner with the Cardinals, Buccaneers, amongst other stops. But I think the guy has a lot of the traits to come in and right away, like, there's nothing that he leans on that I don't know is transferable to the pro level. Sometimes when a guy is winning primarily with speed in college, mm-hmm. you worry right away. You're like, listen, like, it's great when you can run past, like, the, you know, like, whatever, directional state secondary. But, like, I don't know if you can run past whoever, Stephon Gilmore or, you know, any of the other great cornerbacks in the NFL. So I think that Pittman has a chance to be a guy whose transition is much smoother than most rookie wide receivers we've seen recently.
That's such a good point. Yeah, I think we're talking about, like, A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf. There's a tendency to think, especially coming out of this receiver class, oh, these guys draft in the first round, they're just going to immediately dominate and make an impact. Statistically, that actually doesn't happen very often. So we're going to talk about the Niners, and I have some questions about, you know, we'll get to that. But he stands out to me as a guy who, like I said, he can get off the line. I'm also really, by the way, excited to see what Nyheim Hines does in this offense with Rivers. I think that could be fun, too. So here's why I think it's reasonable to have the Titans above the Colts. This defense was 19th against the pass last year, 19th against the run. I think that the defensive line could be quite good. I do not think the secondary is very good. I loved the DeForest Buckner signing on a football level. I think it's totally reasonable to question that decision in the trade and, you know, frankly, the Colts just had to spend their money at some point. And I think he is, like, to me, your favorite football player's favorite football player, right? Like, he's so consistently good and has been since entering the NFL. And he, to me, Field, is the kind of player on the defensive line who just unlocks the rest of the line. And you've got guys like Kamoko Ture coming back, who was awesome until he got hurt in 2019, and I think could be impactful as well. Let's start with the front seven. Like, what do you think that's the strength of this Matt Eberflus defense, and how good do you think they could be?
Yes, I mean, specifically the, you know, DeForest Buckner and Darius Leonard alone sort of makes for a good foundation of any defense. So I actually thought that the price paid to Buckner, both in terms of draft capital and contract, was fairly reasonable. $21 million a year is a lot of money. But when you're trading a first round pick, the player's got a lot of leverage and, you know what you're getting, from the Colts standpoint. And so Chris Ballard has been like super, super patient. And I remember, like at the beginning of the off season, and I feel like this sounds like just tooting my horn here on Twitter, but I put something out there that was essentially like, no team has more cap flexibility and like the sort of the needs and the resources to strike big if they desire than the Colts. And a lot of people be like, yeah, same thing as every other off season. The difference is that they were ready this year. So you go back to Ballard's first offseason, which I believe was two off seasons ago. And it's like, you've got a team that's flawed. You have Andrew Luck, but there's uncertainty with his health and they just weren't ready right then. They just were not ready to come out and be an AFC, like a true blue blood in the AFC. You fast forward a year and you've got all the uncertainty surrounding Andrew Luck's health, which eventually results in Andrew Luck retiring. So again, it's like, do I want to use or play all the chips that I have available when you're not even sure what your ceiling is? This year it was, all right, you know what? We've laid the foundation. We've developed a lot of good players. Offensive line is a bunch of just animals up front. You've got so many good pieces on both sides of the ball. This may not be all in necessarily for the Colts, but they struck. And so DeForest Buckner to me was striking when the time was right. So I think this defense, and the Colts will tell you this, maybe the most important position on their defense is a three technique. It's got to be a guy who can dominate interior pass rush reps consistently. A few years ago, and I think this might have been either the first year of Chris Ballard or the last year of Ryan Grigson, they signed Jonathan Hankins, who had this long, long free agency. It was like I don't even know. He was unsigned until like middle of May or something. A long time. He gets a 3-year, $28 million deal, I think it was, from the Colts, and gets cut a year into it. And it was like, wait, that guy was really good back in the day, right? He was, but they needed more from that three technique. It is the straw that stirs the drink for them. And DeForest Buckner, 6'8", freaky athlete, guy who just eats up opposing guards and centers, and he should be good for, you know, I think the expectation should be 10 sacks a year. That should be the goal.
I also completely forgot to mention that Justin Houston is still on the team. So, yeah, along the D-line. Yeah, it's just such a homegrown defense, right? You obviously Leonard, and you look at, what's the guy's name who plays linebacker they drafted last year? Bobby Okereke. Yep. Okereke. Okay. So him, Ture, they drafted Rocky Asin last year, who was kind of up and down, Marvell Tell. It's just very young, and like, they just need a couple more of these guys to hit, basically, other than Darius Leonard, who's obviously, you know, all pro at this point. And that's my concern, I think, is just the secondary, which was really not great last year. 27th in opposing passer rating, 29th in opposing completion percentage on third down. They went out and added Xavier Rhodes. If you follow football, you know what's happened to Xavier Rhodes' career over the last few years. So
Rhodes went from close to open pretty with Xavier recently.
it's unfortunate. But he would have to make, look, we saw him play really good in the NFL at one point. So he would just need to make a bit of a comeback. I think, did they pick up Malik Hooker's option?
They declined a fifth-year option on Malik Hooker, actually.
So
yeah, which was
that's a question mark, too. Yeah. I just think this secondary field has a lot of question marks. And while I do think the front seven is going to be strong, that, to me, is sort of the biggest question mark on this entire team.
I think that's fair. And so if I were to give like the quick elevator pitch, is that I like the Titans more than the Colts because – I think we've seen from the Titans players what we need to see. It's a matter of them doing it again. I don't know that I've seen it from enough of the Colts guys that I can count on it happening for the first time.
That's such a good way to put it. And so I'm going to try to synthesize the Texans to you, and I'm going to do it in three words.
I can't
Here
wait.
Is Okay. This is the big overarching, I guess, philosophy or case for the Houston Texans. Watson and Watt. That's it, folks. I mean, that's not really fair on offense in particular, but those two guys are both going to have to carry. That was my takeaway from this whole exercise, going up and down the depth charts. Holy smokes, a lot is on both of their shoulders this year.
Yeah, especially Deshaun Watson. I mean, seriously, it's not that he has not been brilliant. He has been brilliant, but you trade away DeAndre Hopkins, and I don't. That it's probably not worth revisiting the Hopkins trade. It's been covered ad nauseum, and I think everybody kind of knows, you know, basically the nuts and bolts of everything that went into that. But I truly believe that Deshaun Watson has as much on his shoulders as basically any quarterback in football this year. And he's proven that he can handle that, right? And that since college, that's what he's been able to do. But it's a really interesting team, on both sides. But, you know, you and I were texting about this a little bit yesterday. Like, we actually kind of like the skill group more than some people do. I'll just mention quickly before we get to the skill group that projected to have the same five offensive linemen back. Not sure it's a great offensive line, but I do like the idea of five guys being back in a comfort zone. I think probably the interior is where we're more focused on right now, is whether those guys can be hold up their end of the bargain, because the tackle group should be really good again. Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard, that's a really strong offensive tackle duo to build your offensive line.
Yeah, that's what we were first of all, hi, Cisco. But that's what we were – that's Fields' dog. We were texting about, the tackles, because, you know, they got a lot of flack from people like yours truly for getting jumped by the Eagles on Andre Dillard. Well, Andre Dillard didn't look so great last year, and Titus Howard looked pretty darn good. So did, of course, Tunsil, despite the fact that he did have a ton of penalties, right? So that's something he has to clean up to justify that enormous
contract.
Yeah,
let the NFL and starts last year, yeah, unfortunately.
Not great. That's a drive killer. But they were good. So I think this offensive line, look, you know, Field, because you know the game, that Deshaun Watson makes them look worse than they are, right? Because he holds onto the ball very well.
Right. That's actually a weird thing, but it's something that I think Russell Wilson, and maybe you would feel strongly.
Totally.
But that's something earlier in his career, maybe more so, but it's not easy to play offensive line for either of those players because of their brilliance of extending plays. Ben Roethlisberger the same way.
I mean, this gets brought up. It's kind of almost a meme. It gets brought up so much in football circles, but Will Fuller's on-off splits are like insane. Like, it just turns into a totally different football team. And so I can see a universe in which Brandon Cooks bounces back and is healthy, right? He's got the concussion history. Will Fuller stays on the field. Randall Cobb, who was actually fairly decent in the slot last year for Dallas, puts up another decent year. I know they really like the tight end, Jordan Akins. David Johnson, terrible contract, much less effective as a runner. But this is actually something that surprised me, Field. You would probably know more because you focus on these stats so much for fantasy. But he was actually really efficient as a pass catcher last year.
Myself with David Johnson, and I'm putting on record right now. Like,
I didn't know that.
Expectations for David Johnson this year. I do. And I can't help myself.
Crazy stat. Let me find this stat that shocked me. It was really bizarre.
Last year, and I think there's a risk in trying to get into the psychology of athletes, but last year, like, if you go back, there are some, like, very Twitter popular videos of, like, David Johnson looking like he's running in quicksand.
Yeah.
I think last year, David Johnson experienced something he never experienced before in his football career, or at least not in a long time, where he basically went from the guy to the guy that was still healthy and all of a sudden on the bench. And I wonder if it just like all caught up to him. And all of a sudden he's like, I'm not saying he checked out, but like, it's just hard to get yourself going, as an athlete sometimes when that transition, like, it's one thing if your team is winning a bunch of games and you can sort of rah-rah your way through it. Like, the Cardinals were bad last year, and he couldn't get playing time with the Cardinals. I know that Kenyon Drake played really well, but I think David Johnson is going to prove a lot of people wrong. I'm not saying that the contract, like, I'm not a big pay running backs person anyways. I understand the criticism of the trade, but I think David Johnson has a chance. I really do. I think he has a chance to have like a 1,400 yard or 1,500 total yards, not rushing only, but like rushing and receiving, like have that kind of big season with 10 touchdowns.
Terrible trade, terrible contract. I think he could surpass, his expectations for him are so low at this point. I think he has a chance to surpass those. By the way, here's the stat I found, was that he actually ranked second in air yards per target amongst running backs behind James White, who only had two. So, only
wouldn't have guessed that.
Not just two catches, but yeah. So the combination of him and Duke Johnson, who the perpetually underused Duke Johnson, is going to be very interesting to me, very confusing for fantasy players. So the offense, the Houston offense, I think has upside. Unfortunately, Phil, they're going to have to meet that upside for this team to win games, because this defense is just, it's not good. Like, it's just on paper. It's a tough situation at every level. I mean, last year they were really bad, 26th versus the pass, 22nd versus the run. Lenny's now barking. He's defending, you know. New coordinator, Romeo Crennel's gone. His, I guess, protege, Anthony Weaver, who's been in, it was the D-line coach for a while. And
Crennel's going to stay, just in a different role. It's just, it's like a senior defensive assistant.
Interesting.
But still part of the defensive staff and one of my favorite people in football. But that's another conversation for another time.
Yes. I think he just won like the nicest person to media award today. So
yeah,
very
he
nice
did.
Man.
And a very
so I think, I actually think there's some kind of interesting pieces in the secondary, which we can talk about, but I just don't know who's rushing the passer outside of JJ Watt in this defense. Winnie it's Merciless. Yep. You know, he got off to a hot start and then tailed off completely without Watt. They lost DJ Reader, one of the sort of underrated big men in the NFL. They need Ross Blacklock, who I think they picked in the second round last year, I want to say.
This year.
Oh, shoot, this year. Okay.
Overall pick.
So they really, they need him to produce immediately. Like, I just, this front is an issue.
Well, they also need your guy, Jacob Martin. I say your guy, of course, he was part of the Jadeveon Clowney trade. It was one of those pieces that when it was thrown in, most people are like, who's Jacob Martin? And the Texans were like, we actually like this player as a developmental rusher. So the Texans, I mean, it's a little daunting. It's a lot. There's a ton on the plate of J.J. Watt, as you said, and also Deshaun Watson. I don't know if anybody is prepared to replace DJ Reader, to your point, tremendously underrated. And then in the secondary, this is a team that was like, remember, I think it was actually back-to-back weeks, they held the Patriots, like completely locked them down in a game. It was like an embarrassment on Sunday night. And then the following week, they get carved like a Thanksgiving turkey by Drew Lock, who was making like a second.
Okay, I'm so glad you brought this up. I'm so glad you brought up this game. Cause I asked a few weeks ago, I asked people, I was like, what is Drew Locke's best game? Cause I just wanted to go back and study Drew Locke. And immediately everyone was like, Texans game. I mean, it was like ridiculous. I was watching it and like, look, Drew Locke was great. My big takeaway was like, Noah Fant's really good. We'll get to the AFC West. But my main takeaway was, holy smokes, that Texans defense was bad in that game. Like just barely even playing.
I mean, I don't know what they were doing. I honestly think, and this is, they were really fired up to play the Patriots and they were not so fired up to play the Broncos. It felt like kind of that simple there, right? You got up for one game and you failed to do so the next game.
I don't know. So the plan, Gary and Conley, who they traded for, and actually I think showed something, you know, after coming to Houston. So it's him opposite, I guess they might want Lonnie Johnson to start outside with Bradley Roby playing the slot, and there's Vernon Hargraves in the mix. Look, I can actually, and then of course, you know, they've got Justin Reed at safety, who's quite good. Who's playing opposite him this year? It's the guy from the Browns, right?
They signed Eric Murray this offseason. Yeah, and a pretty decent contract too, so he'll play.
Yeah, so I can see they've got a couple of, I think, really solid players in that secondary. And I can see a universe in which Lonnie Johnson's kind of the key. If he can play at an average level, I could actually see this secondary being decent. The problem is, Field, I just think this defensive front is going to put them in some really bad spots. That's all.
Yeah, I just don't know that, like, you know, sometimes we talk about the secondary can be offset by the pass rush or the pass rush can be offset by the secondary. It's going to have to be working in harmony for this team to be good defensively. I know the Texans will tell you, and this is fair, they've won a lot of games over the past 7 years, with Bill O'Brien as their head coach. But it's a team that there's some chemical imbalance, and they're going to have to like basically prove a lot of people wrong once again.
It really is one of those teams where when you look back at their like playoff record, it's like, huh? Like, really? Okay.
Doing it. Totally.
I know, somehow. All right. I'm not ruling them out. Like I said, I have this kind of three, murky three, because I think they have the best quarterback in the division.
Safe bet. Yep.
A team I am confidently ruling out, but I still want to talk about, and I'm going to give the credit and love and attention Duval deserves, is Jacksonville. Field, yeah. I'm going to start with a very simple question. Do you think this offense under Gardner Minshew, which I want to talk to you about, will be bad enough to deliver them Trevor Lawrence?
Yes, because I think actually this is very non-scientific, and there's probably like really smart people that are going to listen to this podcast that are going to immediately disprove this. And this is maybe entirely anecdotal, but I think like a sufficient offense with a really, really bad defense is more than enough formula wise. Like we've seen this work in the past where, you can sort of find your way right to the first overall pick. And I don't want to not discuss specific players for the Jaguars, Mina, but I think this is a much more overarching theme year for Jacksonville, right? Because I don't know that this is quite as aggressive as Miami, but in a lot of ways we're seeing some Dolphins-like maneuvers from this team recently, right?
Yes. A gentle tank, shall we say.
It's a gentle tank, yeah. I mean, if you look at the team, the players they acquired this offseason in free agency, the only major investment, I mean like truly major, is Joe Schobert, who signed from the Browns 5 years at the $55 million. But like you do need some pieces. Like you need to be able to get lined up. Like you can't just go into the season with zero players whatsoever on either side of the ball. But it's a team that I think offensively they can be sufficient or average, but still be bad enough in totality to lose a lot of games next year. I don't know that they're the only team that has a chance at the number one pick, but they're definitely the team that I think of when I imagine, like, I don't have etch-a-sketch skills like you, but sometimes I dabble in like drawing, and every once in a while, if I ever draw Trevor Lawrence, he has a teal uniform.
Well, the great thing is it's looking like a three quarterback draft. So, you know, even if like the Dolphins, they mess up the tank a little bit, then get Justin Fields or Trey Lance, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about that. Yeah, holistically kind of, it is, you're right. They got rid of like Calais Campbell and Bouye, and they didn't bring in, you know, well, they weirdly signed Joe Schobert to like a pretty big contract. We can talk about that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, this is the team, even the draft Phil, all this Rivers talk. Even the draft, I feel like I've called you Phil before. Am I making that up?
You're not the first person. Like it's okay. A lot of people, like I had a lot of Fields growing up, a lot of Fields Yates as opposed to Field Yates, but that's okay.
Fields Yates.
Yeah.
That's like attorneys general. okay. So even the draft, they went after like a lot of raw kind of developmental guys, you know? They clearly are playing for the future, and there are very interesting pieces on both sides of the ball. Like the defensive line, I mean, I'd love to hear what you think is going to happen with Yannick Ngakoue. If he's still on the team, this is actually like a very explosive pass rush with him.
Yeah.
And Clavin Chaisson, who they drafted at LSU, Josh Allen. But you know, I mean, I don't, like most human beings can't name a Jaguars corner, outside of Jacksonville.
I was going to say, other than, you know, they drafted CJ Henderson, I think it was 9th overall out of Florida, but like you'd be hard pressed to name members of the Jacksonville secondary besides
it's
that.
A challenge.
Yeah, totally.
That once vaunted. And so like CJ Henderson, he's going to start like all these guys, Chaisson, like he's their best player. Yeah, you know, they got Ronnie Harrison, Jared Wilson, safety. They're fine. You know, it's just it's a far cry from the Ramsey, Church, Bouye days. Miles Jack hasn't been Miles Jack for a while. Like I mentioned, they paid Joe Schobert. I guess, yeah, especially if Yannick's gone. I don't really see how that could, I mean, aside from a trade, like I don't think he's going to hold out. So they tagged him.
Yep.
How do you see that playing out?
I think he's traded. There's a lot of ill will, obviously, on both sides. It's gone public. Yeah. Tony Khan, you know, owner of the team, and also involved in the front office. You know, he and Yannick went back and forth on Twitter, and Tony basically said, like, listen, I don't think any of these tweets where you're like basically demanding to be traded help your value very much, because it gives us a lot less leverage, right? So, basically, like, we both need to, like, this, I think it's obvious both sides need this to be addressed. And I don't know the obvious fits. I think sort of every team fits for Yannick Ngakoue, but I think he gets traded, push comes to shove. And again, this goes back to what I think is that, like, I think a lot of the conversations surrounding the Jaguars need to be bigger picture. And this offseason, they kept Doug Marrone. They fired Tom Coughlin. That might have been late last season, but they kept Dave Caldwell, their GM. And my question, and I don't know if there's an answer right now, is are the Jaguars willing to commit to not just taking the short-term lumps to eventually getting where they need to get to, but also, like, are they committed to the people that are currently in place now to be along for that ride? Because if like Doug Marrone goes, if they go like 5-11 next year or worse, 3-13, and Doug Marrone gets fired, I'm going to say, like, why'd you wait a year? Right? Like,
yeah.
What was it about?
The Band-Aid.
Yeah. Like, just do it last year. Like, you should have hired the coach that you thought could be the person to be your long-term, you know, be your Brian Flores, right? For the, with what the Dolphins did.
Just so here's how I see this playing out. Oh, sorry to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
You got me thinking about the coaches. I just, here's my, like, if I had to predict how this all goes down, I think you're right. I think the offense is going to be there. You know, they'll do things. I don't think they'll do things. Great analysis for me.
Well, I agree with you though.
Gardner Minshew has, I think, physical limitations that will make it challenging for him to ever kind of enter that top half of NFL quarterbacks, but he is smart. He is, like, gutty. He has, like, a really weirdly, besides not having a strong arm, he actually has a very accurate deep ball. You know, coming from that Mike Leach offense, he can go through his reads. Now, I think, like I said, the physical tools aren't quite there. And it's a shame, because I think if he was more athletic, his sort of improvisational abilities might be more productive. But I think he's going to be decent enough in that Jay Gruden offense. Freaking love DJ Chark.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, aside from him. Oh, do you know Tyler Eifert was on this team? I was depressed when I saw that. But, yeah, he's on this team.
Yeah,
that's a tough sentence. So here's how I see this playing out.
$16 million for Tyler Eifert. But I think it's really a 1+1, and so maybe not quite as enticing of a deal as it sounded when I first saw the reports.
Also, Laviska Shenault, fun draft pick.
Yeah.
So anyways, I see a future in which, and then Fournette's probably, he's gone after this year, unless they might trade him even for a season, in which Minshew kind of does some fun stuff under Jay Gruden, but they're losing games because the defense is so bad and Marrone's fired. Jay Gruden takes over as coach through the end of the year. They finish near the top of the draft. They keep Minshew around to compete with whoever they pick. That's kind of how I see this playing out for Jackson.
And here's the thing is that, so let's say Minshew does, if he plays really well, they might not have the opportunity to draft the quarterback really high. If he plays terribly, well, then maybe we'll get some Mike Glennon action, which would be kind of weirdly exciting. But even if Minshew is like just their backup quarterback after 2020, you have 2 years of a 6-round draft pick. Like, he would be sort of as, like, that might still be exceeding expectations of a 6-round quarterback, right? To be a backup quarterback? It's fine.
He'd be like one of the best, he'd be the best backup quarterback in the NFL, probably.
Right? He'd be a great value.
Totally.
So I don't mean to, like, just cut off any of the details around, like, you know, I think the offensive line's got some obvious holes, right? Like, I don't know what's, right, like, Cam Robinson, their left tackle may not be a left tackle anymore. We'll see, right? Like, I don't know about that.
Juwan Taylor, they need him to play better.
Yeah, he played every snap as a rookie last year, which was impressive because he slipped in the draft because of a knee injury. But, you know, got to be more consistent. But I do think this is one of those teams in the NFL where it's like, again, it's about things that are bigger than just the wins and losses this year that really matter and really sort of install or sort of keep my faith instilled in the Jaguars or make it sort of, like, you know, wane from the Jaguars. If that makes sense.
Yeah, they got some of the guys that I think this is something when we talked about the Dolphins last year, it was really hard going into the season. It was really hard to kind of identify even like four players on that roster that you want to build around for the future. With the Jaguars, I see those players. It's sure. Josh Allen, DJ Chark, who I mentioned, you know, on Clavin Chason. I guess they would like him to be that guy. I guess it's not that many players, but, and then CJ Henderson.
I actually think the CPU is pretty solid. You mentioned them earlier, Ronnie Harrison.
Yeah, they're solid. You know, yeah.
They've gotten some legs out of those guys. That's good.
If they're a team with a quick, with a elite quarterback who I think could bounce back quicker than some other tanking organizations. And the right coach, of course. All right. Yeah. I think that's enough Jags talk.
I agree.
Field, as always, we're going to wrap with five questions, but I will let you ask the first question.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Well, it's not even a question, Mina. It's going to be me saying how incredibly enthusiastic and happy I am for you. Earlier today, and this is recorded on Tuesday, this may be out on Wednesday, it was announced that you, your new role at ESPN, your new title at ESPN, is you are an ESPN NFL analyst, and you are part of the refined cast or what have re-triggered cast of NFL Live, which also includes great, great teammates. Laura Rutledge will host with Dan Orlovsky, Marcus Spears, Keyshawn, you, and a whole host of people on the insider side. But Mina, I'm so happy for you. I know how much, like, at the end of the day, the one thing I can, no one will ever be able to ever question about you is that you love football. You love it with your whole heart. You've loved it, I know, since your childhood and grew up sort of learning to love the game with your dad. Your Seahawks fandom has never been a mystery, but it's been something that I think has been sort of a catalyst to where you are now, right? Your enthusiasm for the Seahawks has turned into a platform that you've been able to show how much you love the game. And there's no one I enjoy talking football more than with you. It's you. Every time you ask me to come on the pod, I could not respond any faster to say yes. I couldn't be any happier for you. You deserve it. You deserve everything that comes your way. And this is really cool. It's a win for everybody that Mina Kimes gets to be. I mean, not that you weren't always talking about football, but now that you are contractually obligated to talk about football nonstop, it's a win for everybody, Mina. Very, very cool. Fired up about this one.
Well, how am I supposed to ask you a rude question from Lenny Nowfield?
Whatever, I don't care. Yeah,
you're the best. You're the best. You're so nice.
Come on, have at it.
Very few people I enjoy talking about football with more than you, so I'm really hoping we can get a chance to do it on television, too, once this all starts. I really appreciate it. By the way, for those, you know, this podcast is going to continue. I tweeted that, but if you didn't see it, some of my roles at ESPN are changing, but I'm going to continue to put out the Mina Kimes show featuring Lenny. All right. Thank you. That was very kind of you. Now I'm going to ask you three questions, and Lenny was going to ask one. My first question is, next week we're covering the NFC West. I think it's pretty clearly the best division in football. Do you disagree?
No, not even close. By far the best division in football.
Okay. That it seems like all educated minds feel that way. Then who do you think is the second division? And that's where I think it gets tricky.
Really good. I think there's a chance that – so I think the NFC North has a chance to have two teams make the Super Bowl. Because I believe in – I'm
really?
Yeah, I'm like weirdly – I'm like, oh. I might be – it might come across as defiance, but I'm talking myself into being alone on the Vikings this year. And the Packers. I know,
wow! I wish I was like you wanted to talk the NFC North, because this whole podcast we've been like, you're right, I agree with you, but it sounds like we would have had some tension, because I do not feel that way.
I'm interested. I'm hooked, and you know, whatever. Save this one, cut it, splice it, and a year from now, less than that, we can revisit it, and I'll look like a fool probably, but I'm really excited.
The only person who was right, because I don't think many people agree with you. That's a great. Go out on a limb, Field Yates. Yes, I love it.
I'm excited about them. I think this year could be sort of a year they make a lot of noise.
Fascinating.
But then, like, the NFC South is interesting too, right? Because you've got two teams, and certainly the expectations for the Saints are to make the Super Bowl. And I think the Buccaneers, I don't think you do a lot of the things they did this offseason without wanting to make a run in a hurry. So it's definitely the NFC West, but the North and South are sort of poking around and trying to make it interesting.
I'm with you on the NFC South. I also am kind of intrigued by the AFC North, which I haven't done yet. But at first I was like, well, obviously the Ravens are the best team. But then as I was going through and ranking the AFC teams, I found the Browns and Steelers kind of creeping a bit on me. Now, Obviously, I think the Bengals are going to be bad again, but I think they're going to be less bad.
Sure.
It's literally not possible to be worse. But yeah, the Steelers and the Browns are really interesting. So, all right. Very fascinating. I love that Vikings take. I've been asking everyone this who comes on, what is a quarantine content recommendation you have?
Trying to think of something. Okay. Simple. Easy. Because I don't want to just say like, yeah, you should go watch Tiger King. I heard it's pretty good. My wife, Chapin, is like a sick athlete. She's very competitive too. Played field hockey at Boston College, like definitely more athletic than I am. No question about it. So she loves sports, not just playing them, but also consuming them on television. We've been joking. Like I asked her if she would be interested in going back and watching Survivor and this 40th season. It's the season of champions. It's like all the iconic characters, including most notably Boston Rob, who's like the goat of Survivor. Anyways, we watched it, and then there was a time where, like, for reasons unknown, a couple of the episodes were not available on demand. And we decided, like, we're not going to power through. We're just going to wait until they become available. We're not going to, like, skip ahead. So then I said, hey, in the meantime, are you interested in watching The Challenge on MTV? And she was like, I mean, I'll give it a shot. All the way in. I've always been all the way in. She's all the way in now. Survivor and The Challenge have been our sports when sports are not otherwise on.
I know so many people who love The Challenge. I've never seen it. A lot of my friends in the Levitard world, including Charlie Kravitz, who produces Highly Questionable, they have like a challenge podcast that I now feel strongly you should go on, Field Yates. But I've never watched it.
Yeah, I mean, not that you don't have a line of debate, but I'm telling you, you're going to have some plane rides in your future across the country, and I would suggest binging because it is binge worthy.
Wow. Okay. I'm watching, we just finished season two of Broadchurch, which was okay. It's like a BBC detective drama. Fourth question. Cam Newton's on the Patriots. If he's healthy, who's better, the Patriots or the Bucks?
Man.
Cam's healthy in this scenario.
Yeah. I'm going with the Patriots. And I say better as in like, I think they win more games, right? And I think, you know, Mina, we talked about this at the top of the show. People have a hard time of detaching themselves or detaching everything from Cam as a football player. But Cam as a football player is freaking awesome. And if he's healthy, he's freaking awesome. The Patriots, I think, are, you know, like a 12 to 13 win team. Maybe more like an 11 win team.
I love it.
Because their schedule is
tough schedule.
Very unfavorable.
Tough,
very
unfavorable. Yeah, and they could be. I think the Patriots we see at the beginning of the season could be very different from the Patriots we see at the end of the season. They always are, but in this case, particularly. By the way, I'm so glad you brought the whole thing where like people talk about, oh, Cam off the field, dude. Cam's like a perfect citizen, man. He like honestly, and setting that stupidity aside because he's never got in trouble, all that stuff. He also is less of an attention seeker than Tom Brady, okay, who has been suspended, like had that weird. Made his team doctor. I mean, it's a comp that drives me crazy.
It's ridiculous.
Not that I'm not even saying that like anything against Brady. I just think there's a very clear double standard with Cam.
Totally. Of course. With Cam, the rules just don't apply. Now people are like, well, you know, when they're discussing his injury history, it's like, well, Cam, you know, he got in that car accident and fractured his back. Like, I'm pretty sure he literally didn't miss a game with a fractured back. Like, you know,
oh my God,
like,
that's the picture where he's smiling, yeah, right? He like is next to his car smiling. I remember.
Yeah, I'm like, are you kidding me? So anyways, I think Cam has been, you know, covered in a way. I'm not saying by people within our company. I'm just saying like the public perception of Cam has always been a very, very tricky, slippery slope.
People also aren't talking enough about the Patriots, like incredible track record at this point of having the most handsome quarterbacks in the NFL. It's really, honestly, quite shocking.
You know what? I'm not joking. First thing Chapin said to me when they signed Cam is she said, another handsome
it's
quarterback. Hilarious.
I mean, Brady, Jimmy, Cam, that's like the top, you're going all top five quarterbacks there. It's unreal. I don't know. It's an amazing, amazing feat. All right, last question, Field, as always. Comes from Lenny. It's actually, he pivoted after hearing all your kind praise for me. He didn't want to ask a question to you. He has a question for your dog, Cisco. Okay. He wants to know if Cisco feels inadequate because you don't let him on any of your content.
So it's a great question. And it's been a source of consternation between Cisco and I recently. We're getting close, and perhaps unintentionally. Yesterday, I was doing a segment on Get Up, SportsCenter, excuse me, and I have the tripod set up right now as part of our TVU app, and Cisco is in a cone right now. He recently broke his paw, and thankfully, he's out of the cast, but as a result of being in a cast, he got a hotspot, and it was, which is like the most predictable thing ever. So he's been in the cone, and hopefully he's out of the cone by Wednesday, but he has been, you know, I think he feels he's a little bit embarrassed by the cone, so he spends basically all day following my wife and I around. So yesterday he was downstairs where I have the setup, and he was being very quiet, and he was so good until like the last 30 seconds of the segment, and then he ran past the tripod and did actually make contact with it with the cone. So maybe people that were watching saw my TV like look like it sort of tilted and then sort of tilted back. He's going to make his way onto some content, Lenny. It's a very fair question. I think when he's back to full strength, we'll start to train him and get him confident. I don't think he has it's not a stage fright issue. I think it's simply a health and a load management thing for him at a young age, but I feel like he's ready.
Listen, maybe the two of them, we can take both of our, you know, work days off and the two of them can podcast together. If anyone wants to just hear an hour of silence with the occasional muffled bark.
That feels like maybe top of the charts, but I don't want to be too arrogant in suggesting that our dogs are must watch and must listen to podcasting or TV.
That's a